Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. It's a JJ and the Bear podcast, guest hosted by John Manuel. Thanks for the download. We want to remind you that Baseball America's podcasts are brought to you by Sports Management Worldwide. Jobs in baseball start with sportsmanagementworldwide.com. Training and mentoring from former LA Dodgers general manager and former MLB scouts who assist you with becoming scouts, agents, and working in the front office of a professional baseball team. That's all teased at sportsmanagementworldwide.com. That's where you get the info. And I don't know how we let the JJ and the Bear into the baseball industry, but it's been a long time now for JJ, and Josh has been barging here for almost a year. So we found a new cave last August and has been here ever since. And now Josh just thinks this is normal, JJ, that we do a midseason prospect update, top 50, but then we also do a 300 scouting report ebook. He thinks that's just par for the course. When we, you and I know that it's craziness and just crazy enough that it might work.
It was something we have debated and discussed and mulled over for years. And every year before this one, in the end, we go, nah, let's don't do that. It's the craziest month of the year to do it in many ways, because we have the draft in the College World Series and July 2 international signing period and the futures game rosters and...
Yeah, that's not insignificant.
You know, but all that.
And the futures game rosters, but the futures game program, which we produce and have produced for 15 years. We don't just sit in a room and help pick the rosters and do a dream team of rosters. It's actual hard work to do of scouting reports, bios, pictures, and producing a print product, which is, I think, a big reason why we're part of the selection process for the futures game.
But
all you guys really needed was some Bear.
Yeah, man. Apparently so. Once we have, you know, we add the Bear to the mix, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's do an ebook.
Yeah.
And it's been very fun to do. It's very fun that it's gone, and we will have it up available for purchase at a pretty inexpensive price, $4.99, in the very near future. So if you want, don't think of it as the Prospect Handbook Midseason Edition, because, I mean, we don't want to give you an idea that we're going to write a 250-word scouting report on everyone at midseason. That'd be crazy.
It would have been
that would be crazier than we were crazy enough to do.
Correct.
But we did rank the top tens in every organization with a little write-up on each of them, a little bit more on the number ones. We picked out some rising prospects, some falling prospects, whose updates on who's been hurt, updates on who's graduated. We took a look at the top. We didn't rank the guys for the draft, this year's draft, partly because guys haven't even had to sign yet.
Right.
Still some unsigned guys. But we did take a look at the top five picks in everyone's draft with a little, you know, synopsis on each of them. And then, because people keep asking for it and we can't kill it even if we try, the 2017 lineups are in there. So you can take a look at your proposed look of how your team sorts out for 2017 with many caveats, as in that it's not making allowances for free agency.
It's not even a best case scenario. I don't know. What should we call that, Josh? Like, here's what your team would look like under 1970 rules.
Here's what your team would look like if you did not have a general manager and thus could not make roster moves.
Right, exactly. That's pretty much it. This is your keeper league roster. You're not allowed to make trades.
I will say this. The Twins pitching lineup for 2017 looked pretty decent and almost feasable with Alex Meyer and Trevor May and Cole Stewart and Jay Oberios.
None of whom are in my kitchen or have ever been in my kitchen, or I believe are going to be in the futures game. Let's do a quick futures game preview, because May was injured. So Oberios was named to replace
him. And then Meyer replaced May.
Okay, so I thought that May, oh, they were both.
I think Oberios was named originally, wasn't
it? Yeah, Oberios named originally, and then Meyer replaced May.
I misread my futures game rosters, so I apologize. But let's preview the futures game a little bit here, because We're all going to Minneapolis. I freaked out earlier this week over my hotel being booked, but I booked my hotel and our rental car and my flight on two different times that I booked them. So it kept saying, you don't have a flight booked for this trip. And it was like, yes, I do, but not in this same trip. So
it's okay. When I went on a trip earlier this year, I didn't book a rental car until midnight that morning because I totally forgot.
That happens. But I think there are going to be more people here for the futures game than there were at spring training for you, at least in one concentrated place. So I was nervous about that, but I'm excited. I haven't been to the last two futures games, so I'm looking forward to being back. I think the first futures game I went to was 04. It was in Houston, and I just remember seeing B.J. Upton, David Wright, Delmon Young taking batting practice together. at the time, it seemed really awesome. You know, in 2014, not as much.
Nice. That's nice.
You know, in 2004 was really, and Aaron Hill was the extra guy in there, and he wound up being the MVP. So he was the fourth guy in their foursome.
There is a long history of the MVP award going to someone who you look back and go, he was the MVP?
Chase Wan Lin is pitching now.
You were just going to go, I just saw the Chinese Taipei national team last week. We normally call them Taiwan, but when they play an international baseball competition, they don't want to poke the China bear, so they go with Chinese Taipei. But Wang Wei Lin is their center fielder, or Lin Wang Wei. That is Lin Che Xuan's brother. He played 6 seasons in the minor leagues for the Twins. Now he's on the Chinese Taipei national team. But he did not have as good an arm as a brother. But like Justin Huber, another former Futures Game MVP. There have been some...
Matt Davidson's hoping that he doesn't end up in that, because Matt Davidson won it last year. Then I think, if I remember correctly, went on to... if he wasn't the AAA All-Star Game MVP, he was like the Home Run Derby champ. I mean, he had a pretty big week there, and things have not gone as well lately.
Yeah, and they call it the Larry Doby Award, which I was not aware of. Is that that's what Wikipedia is telling
me?
Cool. It is very cool, but I wish we had a better award for, you know, Larry Doby. Futures Game is kind of cool, but to hear your all-time winners, according to Wikipedia, I'm going to take their word for it.
A lot of these I can vouch for because we've been there.
Alfonso Soriano for sure. Thumbs Burroughs. Up. I did not remember that Sean Burroughs was the MVP in 2000. Toby Hall, 2001. Jose Reyes, I like triples, 2002. Grady Sizemore, Aaron Hill, Justin Huber, Billy Butler, then Chin Lung Hu in 2007 in San Francisco.
Oh yeah.
I think I remember trying to interview him on the field, and that did not go easily.
But no, I remember he.
Yeah,
was,
he was the MVP,
and it was one. But I mean, this is an All-Star game. The problem with the MVP at the All-Star game is like most of these guys are going to get 2 at bats.
Yeah,
pitchers are pretty much void from because you're going to get an inning. I don't. Maybe if a pitcher went out there and had the perfect 9-pitch, 3 strikeout inning, maybe he would get consideration. Right. Otherwise, he's not.
Maybe a guy comes in and shuts down a threat.
There has not been a pitcher who's been MVP. Chase Wan Lin is the only one, but he was not an MVP as a pitcher. Rene Tassone.
Oh, I remember
Hank,
that guy.
Hank Conger, Grant Green, Nick Castellanos, Matt Davis. So Nick Castellanos, Billy Butler, Aaron Hill, Sizemore, and Reyes. So 2002 to 2004. Heretofore will be known as the golden age of the Futures Game.
MVPs, but not...
Futures Game MVPs. They must have been good Futures Game. But we have a pretty good one set up for this year. Josh Bear, who is the player you're most anticipating seeing? With the caveat that it may be someone just that you're looking forward to the most because you haven't seen them yet this year or in spring training.
I mean, I'm really looking forward again to seeing my personal cheese ball, Luis Severino. Because I saw him once this year and he was terrible. And I wasn't terrible, but the results weren't there because he gave up 25% of the runs he's given up his entire career.
All right.
That day. So I'd like to see him on a good day. I want to see Joe Barrios a lot.
Pitched today, Ben Badler there. Well, I'm sure we'll have a report by the time this is posted from Ben, but went to go see him in the Eastern League up in Connecticut.
And who Ben saw yesterday, I think Dan Norris is going to be there?
Daniel Norris should be there, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen him yet, but I was always going to see a fellow Norris.
Ben saw 33 pitches, but they all happened to come in one inning, which was bad for Daniel Norris because that many had to come out.
Yep.
I'm thinking we're going to see fewer pitches from him and just say maybe one more out.
Let's hope so. If so, even if we don't, I'm sure that Daniel Norris will be just cool with it because he's pretty much cool with everything. There's karma. It'll come back around on him.
And then, of course, the hitting. The Joey Gallo experience is always good to experience multiple times. Chris Bryant, I haven't seen him since the Fall League, but he seems to be doing well for himself. And
he's okay without you.
Yeah, he's okay without you.
And Peter O'Brien, he's got as much power, raw at least, as those two guys. But doesn't get to it as much in games. But it's going to be a fun batting practice for those three guys.
JJ, who are you most looking forward to seeing in the Futures game? Who are you? Whether it's somebody you've seen before or someone you haven't seen? I mean, you've seen Tyron Guerrero before, but you get to see him again.
I have to start with a quibble, which is that people say that so and so has as much raw power as Joey Gallo, and the answer is if you're not talking, if we're not talking about Mike Stanton, and I might include Bryce Harper in that discussion. Otherwise, the answer to that is no. This guy also has 80 raw power. But Joey Gallo's 80 raw power is more 80 raw power.
Joey Gallo might be the 90. I mean, he might be like Billy Hamilton is that 0.3% who's off the scale for speed. And I think that That might be Joey Gallo. I'm with you. He might be off the scale.
I'll say this. I hear what you're saying, but wait and see.
No, no, he
parks some balls in places where humans have never set foot.
And that's
about Chris Bryant.
No, I'm talking about Peter O'Brien.
That's the thing I'm looking forward to most in this game. I'm sorry if you're a fan and you're not, you're watching this on TV. The BP before the game,
right,
is always, I wouldn't say as more enjoyable. I mean, I love seeing the guys. I love seeing the pitchers. I love seeing, every now and then you see a great defensive play.
Right.
But to just have the ability, especially when you get, in a dream scenario, we're going to get Bryant and Gallo in the same BP group. Maybe throw in, O'Brien and that. When that happens, the competitive juices start flowing. One guy hits the ball about 460 feet, and the next guy wants to hit it about 470. I'm looking forward to that. Gallo is always fascinating to see. I mean, he truly is, just kind of, but I'm very excited to see, Javier Baez for the first time this year and see, this could be a, Javier Baez could, MVP of this game we just established is not, but Javier Baez could easily be the MVP of this game, or Javier Baez could be the guy who you walk away saying, man, he looked pretty bad here, because he's going to be facing premium velocity. He can catch up to that. That's not a problem at all. But the question is our guys going to try to challenge him? Or are they going to use the approach that they've been using pretty much in AAA this year, which is we're going to make you, show that you can hit something besides a fastball, that's hittable.
I omitted Baez, too. I've never seen Baez in all my travels, and I'd really like to see what all the fuss is about.
I'm really looking forward to Julio Urias.
Urias.
He's just so unique. Urias is unique. I didn't mean to go that way, but... he's so young. He's got the eye issue. I want to see that up close and personal and just see what it's like. And I want to see him pitch. It shouldn't be that big of an issue. I suppose it's not for him pitching. I want to see how it works. I want to see how it all works. The one thing seeing it with video, it's a whole other thing to see in person. Out of the pitchers, I think I'm most interested to see him. I really do want to see Daniel Norris in person because I've read so much about him. He seems like a fascinating young man, but also... The scouting reports this year, the results are finally starting to match the scouting reports. And it started last year, but boy, he got off to a great start in the first half this year. I'd like to see how he rebounds from this poor start that he just had this week in his last start before the Futures game. And I'm kind of interested just to see how the fans in Minneapolis react to a Futures game. That's one thing I like to watch is how much are the fans in that area invested in the minors? Like there were a couple years ago in Kansas City
with the sellout.
I wasn't there, but like Kansas City was a sellout. Like, please, we're begging you. And it wasn't the same in New York last year, right? City Field, New York.
Nice. I mean, it was a good crowd, but it wasn't anything like in Kansas City. It's been three straight
Futures games that I've missed now because I wasn't in Arizona either.
It does seem like that they were more charged up for the Futures game in Kansas City,
anywhere else that it's been. I mean, I would love to see Minnesota, same division.
How much would it be if they had
Buxton and Sano? This would be a sellout. There'd be standing room only. There'd be stalkers.
That was going to be my next point. That's exactly right. If Buxton and Sano were in this game, I think this would have rivaled Kansas City for the electricity for a Futures game because this is a good baseball market, great ballpark according to all reports. I'm hoping there's going to be I don't know. I haven't seen the celebrity softball lineup. I was hoping Paul Westerberg maybe. Prince, of course. Some Minneapolis royalty, pun intended.
Keep on hoping on that.
Some music royalty. Yeah, I mean, Minneapolis.
Prince was in Wimbledon the other day with a scepter. Yeah. So maybe he'll come
Minneapolis owned the 80s. Didn't Minnesota just own the 80s for music with the Replacements and Prince? I mean, that's it. It pretty much could have just played the Prince card and been done. But they added the Replacements. I mean, puffy shirts. So they could have owned Seinfeld Day 2. So to me, the ballpark will be a big part of the attraction. I'm looking forward to that. But I'm looking forward to seeing Urias the most, I think, out of all these pitchers. I just think he's the most unique guy.
One other guy I want to look at and watch is Henry Owens.
Good call.
You can talk to scouts who see Henry Owens and say, not that he's not going to be solid, but they say, you know what? The results he's having now, he has a great changeup. Changeups work, in the minors. And then you have other guys who see him and say, no. But the guy I saw is a dominant guy. I'm going to be very interested to see which Now, in a one-inning stint, especially, the question seems to revolve a lot around what kind of fastball does he have?
Right.
And you can get guys who say
And this is the event where, for the pro scouting side, where else do you get to see a pitcher's top velocity? Because pretty much every pitcher goes here and says, all right, I'm going to air it out.
Homer Bailey.
Exactly. I mean, Homer Bailey is the ultimate in 2006, seven, whatever year it was.
He just threw fastballs every single pitch.
Every pitch was a fastball, and he also had a little bleeding like blister on his finger, and he just didn't care. He was asking the cop about his gun and the security officer in the dugout. I mean, it was full-on Homer Bailey, which is all Texas. Everything he talked about was, I don't care. This is an all-star game. I'm throwing the hell out of it every pitch. And hey, what kind of Glock is that? You know, like, I mean, it was a great look at Homer Bailey. And so this Futures game, it's going to be I'm really sorry that we're missing Francelis Montes with his knee injury. That's a guy we knew we would see triple digits out of. Who was the next most likely triple digits guy here? JJ, you saw Teyron Guerrero before Teyron Guerrero was cool.
He could give you 100 if it's everything.
Is Alex Meyer the likely guy? I mean, I saw 99 out of him.
Any Romero could do it. Robert Stevenson has had 99, 100. I don't think he's been doing that very consistently lately, right. But it's been in there. Lucas Giolito, uh-huh. I mean, you could see. I think this is a group. We're not going to see Bruce Rondon, who went out there and it was like, oh, wait, he took a little off of it. Exactly. It's a 99.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we saw Yordan Aventura, but.
I always remember Henry Rodriguez when he was with an A's farm hand.
That was back when 100 was something that you stopped everything.
That was
like
6 years ago. That was in New York, I believe, in 2008, Yankee Stadium 2. And like he fell down pitching, hitting 100, but everyone was still like, ooh, he hit 100. And now that really, just in 6 years, that's gone from not common to like, eh.
I remember making a pilgrimage to see Aroldis Chapman when he was in AAA. He came through Durham thinking...
Being mocked for tweeting that he threw 103.
But thinking,
that's another story.
But thinking, you know, wow, this will be my first opportunity 100. To see 100. Taking a picture of my radar gun on my phone at the time, which I think it was probably like a, you know, 1 megapixel. And finding from it, like, you know, thinking, I've seen 100. When will I ever see that again? And now you go, if you see it, it's very nice, but you don't go, huh, that's something I'll never see again. You say, okay, I'll probably see that again before all that long.
It really has changed. How many hundreds have you seen this year, Josh? Have you seen any?
I don't think I've seen 100 this year. The last I remember was the Cubs Corey Black. And that was one pitch in Staten Island.
Really?
And it was, hello.
How about that? Corey Black. I did not know that he had 100.
He's in your book. It's in our book.
I didn't remember that I wrote that. Did I write that when he was in the Yankees?
You've written a lot of guys.
You probably wrote it off of my tweet.
That's pretty funny. That's really funny. We have a couple Twitter questions related to the Futures game, but some of them are just prospect related. How about Benedetto asks, best Indians outfield prospect, Bradley Zimmer, Clint Frazier, Tyler Naquin. I'm taking Clint Frazier on that person.
One of these is not like the other. I mean that in no, right. But Tyler Naquin is still a guy, better year this year. Still a guy, though, that you say it's that borderline between useful fourth outfielder and regular. And if Clint Frazier ends up as a useful fourth outfielder, I think if you're the Indians, you probably end up being pretty disappointed in that.
Yeah, I agree.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, like, Tyler Naquin's tools just do not add up to those other guys. And I would go Frazier, Zimmer, Naquin. I mean, I think Zimmer might wind up being a lot like Naquin, only a little bit toolsier. It is strange that they have three straight outfielders that they drafted in the first round. That's just the way their board fell, I suppose, is what Brad Grant would say. Then we've got BuzzFeed Lenny. I like this question as well. Is this Rob Kaminsky surge related to better stuff, better command, or both? I think it's related to the fact that he actually just was allowed to pitch. You know, Rob Kaminsky was one of the top high school pitchers in last year's draft class. It wasn't a big velocity class, but he does throw hard, solid average velocity from a left-hander, 88-92. But he had a hellacious breaking ball, one of the best curveballs, if not the best curveball, in the 2013 draft class. He was highly regarded. In fact, for most of the year, I'd say he was more highly regarded than Hunter Harvey, who has all the buzz. Kaminsky was a North Carolina signee. They seem to attract first-round draft pick pitching prospects. And Kaminsky's just getting a chance to pitch. And in the low minors, a guy who can throw fastball strikes and spin a breaking ball, that guy's going to dominate. So I'm not really surprised that Rob Kaminsky, I don't mean to pull a circa 2004 Alan Simpson, but I'm not surprised that that doesn't play as well on the podcast when I take my glasses off, but I like that impersonation.
It's not all that surprising. You know, would I rather have Hunter Harvey than him? I'll take Hunter Harvey because I do think he has more pure stuff.
Bedboard. I'll take Kaminsky because I think Kaminsky's going to throw harder, and he has the hand speed to spin that breaking ball. That means he's going to have the hand speed to throw harder down the line. I'll take the lefty with the two-plus pitches. I'm not saying Harvey doesn't have two-plus pitches. I'm also going to take, for whatever reason, maybe I'm just saying this because intern Jacob Emmert is from New Jersey and he's in here. I'm taking Jersey over Bandy's high. So.
And the Bears, 6 years in New Jersey, thank you very much.
I don't think of you as a Jersey guy at all.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You don't have the gold bracelet.
I don't fist pump very often, and I never tan, and I rarely do the laundry, and I don't go to the gym.
But I like Kaminsky. I'm pretty bullish on Kaminsky.
I like Kaminsky, too, but
And I can tell you that last year, the Cardinals officials I talked to, obviously they love Marco Gonzalez. He's already gone to the big leagues. They like Kaminsky better. They thought Kaminsky had more ceiling. I'm with them.
I would agree on that.
Like I said this year on the draft show, put Flaherty together with Cardinals pitching development equals potential stud. Same with Kaminsky.
Thank you. If you're going to go on this bet board, maybe you bet on track record.
Absolutely.
They know how to pick their pitchers. And Kaminsky, thank you very much, is proving that short people do have a reason to live.
I like both of them for sure. I love that you're like one of the youngest guys on the staff, and your 70s music references drop regularly.
Randy Newman.
I guess you just did. Do the scout view reviews, Youper in Iowa asked, do the scout reviews of Jonathan Crawford at West Michigan match up to the decent numbers? JJ, it sounds like they actually exceed the decent numbers, which is the problem.
Right, and then the question becomes, okay, let's start by analyzing this. Why is Jonathan Crawford in West Michigan?
That's a great question because the Tigers are not known for their patience.
Well, but see, not Purcello, only that, but Jonathan Crawford is a guy who logically you would say should be in some way, shape, or form ready for the challenge of high A.
I'll throw in one caveat. He was an outfielder in high school. He did not pitch much his freshman year at Florida. Now, his sophomore and junior years, he did. So, I mean, he did pitch 2 years of college significantly. But it would not surprise me if he were more – I think it's fair to assume that he's more raw than the average college right-hander. I also think that there's probably an issue in terms of workload, just how many innings they can pitch him. Because I think he was very erratic last year with his stuff at Florida. Entered the year as a guy we thought could go in the first 10 to 15 picks. Wound up falling to 20th overall, and I think that was a little bit of a surprise that he went that high.
But I know another way to put it. His stats, actually, I would say, are pretty poor this year, considering everything, which is West Michigan, for one, is a very good pitcher's park, an excellent pitcher's park. And he's not – you really just would like to see a little bit more on the strikeouts, a little bit less on the walks. Again, I'm not saying that, give up on him in any way, shape, or form, but as you said, a little bit less polished than the average – weekend starter, SEC, high draft pick. That being said, I don't think that's a great year. I think that the stuff is actually a little better, as you said, a little better than the results are right now.
Yeah, so that's, I'm not sure how concerning that is, because again, I'm concerned just that the Tigers haven't moved him aggressively, because that is their MO. But I do think that goes back to, for a college pitcher, he's less experienced than the average guy. That said, so is Braden Shipley. Braden Shipley has been moved a little bit more aggressively by the Diamondbacks. Yeah. He's been more effective.
The interesting thing with this is
they're somewhat similar.
Maybe this is a little bit of a trend, though, because if you look at that West Michigan staff, again, in the great pitcher's park,
has been the college
pitcher,
All-Stars
this year. You've got, you've had Buck Farmer has been there all year.
Who was Austin a college Kubica. Senior.
Yeah.
And Austin Kubica, hard worked. He's like the new Kenny Ball for the Detroit Tigers. Kenny Ball worked very hard at Rice. Austin Kubica was the guy. Austin Kubica that was a 70 fastball as a freshman and a 40 as a junior. That's the quote I remember from last year's draft. Kevin Zomek, another college guy. Wow.
I mean, this is.
And Chad Green, is that, that's not the same Chad Green who, no, that's a different Chad. I'm thinking of a different guy. This is Louisville Chad Green, not Kentucky.
Right, but
Chad
still,
Green.
I mean, their entire starting pitching staff are college guys who you have to ask. Your second question is, oh, nice season. Second question is, why are you here?
Exactly. By the way, just got confirmation from a Blue Jays official that Daniel Norris taken out after 33 pitches just because of pitch count. Right. Too many pitches in the inning. Right. Just good to get the confirmation on that. So breaking news, sort of, confirmation here on the Baseball America podcast, the JJ and the Bear podcast, where JJ has to go chat. So we're getting all of our JJ in. In about 5 or 10 minutes. So we're getting our JJ in before Bear.
Because I've already answered like 100 questions on midseason update.
Well, I better ask Bear some questions then here. Bear, besides the you said your personal cheese ball, Luis Severino. I did want to ask you a Yankees-related question. So we had a lot of Yankees. Obviously, they're one of the 30 teams that we did in our midseason update. That organization's draft from last year, we rated it as the best draft last October when we did draft report cards. What's the interim report on that? And I guess there was some bad news on that front, was there not, from last year's draft class?
All year, I mean, besides Giugiaro being hurt, the reviews on him at third base had been poor, at best. Talking about him moving to first somewhere down the line. I mean, internally, they talk about, you know, defense is something you can learn. You can learn better than any of the other tools.
Which I agree.
Nolan Arenado says, hello.
Hello, absolutely.
But the reviews this year were scathing, and that's being nice. They said he'd run into a lot of power. That's not a question, but will he be able to hit for average at the high levels? And that's a question down the line. Ian Clarkin went on the DL today. A couple days ago. I'm still trying to figure out why, but the rumor has something to do with his ankle and maybe he's slipping on a ball again. And Aaron Judge is doing quite well. He made my 51 through 75, which you can find in our handbook. I just gave you one of. He hit the heck out of South Atlantic League pitching. As well, he should have. We just talked about Jonathan Crawford doing really well as a college guy in low A, and Aaron Judge did really well as a college guy in low A, and now he's doing pretty well in high class A. So, mixed reviews this year on that draft, but certainly not any reason to slam it early.
Is it a great sign or a bad sign for the system that the breakout players of their system this year, not breakout, but the big news in their system have been guys like Peter O'Brien and Robert Refsnyder, who can really hit, or college players who can really hit, but at the same time, neither one really has a true defensive home.
Well, I think that's par for the course with that. We talk a lot with scouts about we have a lot of guys who seem inathletic or not very athletic, who they can hit a little bit, and they don't have a defensive home, and that goes against the vaunted profile
that
the Yankees came up with back in the day under Bill Livesey, I believe.
Yep, 20-plus years ago now.
And they just don't seem to use it anymore, and the results have been poor. So that's why you get a guy who can't really do much defensively and needs to be a DH or a first baseman. And last I checked, you can only have one of those things at the major league level. But if you have guys like Greg Bird, who is an inathletic first baseman, and Dante Bichette, who the reviews are not...
Let's not even discuss Dante Bichette in this
fair enough
context. We're talking about prospects here. So
fair enough. And guys like Peter O'Brien as well. And now we're trying to find a position for Rob Refsnyder, who has tried second base to mixed reviews at best and is moving back to his original home of the outfield, but got his first start in right field since 2012 today. That's the problem. They've got guys who can hit a little bit, but they can't really play defense, and you need to have some defense at some point. My thing with Refsnyder is, as I explained on another interview the other day, if you bring him up and he's not a polished second baseman, he's not a good second baseman, and you pair him with Derek Jeter up the middle, you're going to get a vacuous hole in the middle of your infield. You're going to have to pray that every ball is hit to Mark Teixeira.
And then the thing is, if you put him in right field, even as good of a year as he's having this year, it's 11 home runs. He doesn't profile there, and you've already got basically two center fielders in Ellsbury and Gardner. I mean, Ellsbury obviously has one 30 home run season, JJ.
If this was the 2002, 3, 4, you know, 1998, you know, Yankees, where you were getting A-Rod, you're not getting, you know, mid-career PED enhanced potentially A-Rod.
Or
there,
just to go to the very recent past. If you had a second baseman who hit 30 home runs
like
a year,
Cano,
as they had in Cano, you could have a right fielder who didn't hit 30 home runs
but
a year.
But if you have that, if that's your outfield, then you really do have a question of, okay, where's the power coming from?
Right, and you've got your prototypical right fielder down the line in Aaron Judge. That's your big, hairy monster with the big club who can just mash balls like Josh Hamilton did in that home run derby.
And Aaron Judge has won a home run derby. I saw him win it in Omaha a couple years ago, and he's certainly a beast physically, and he hits them far.
Oh no,
even with bad bats.
He makes above average sized men look like little children. But if you put Rob Russell,
talking to him at the South Atlantic League All-Star game, I really felt like I was 4'8".
I commend you for being so brave as to talk to him.
He's nice.
But Rob Refsnyder is neither big nor hairy nor a monster. So,
but outside of Dellin Betances and obviously Tanaka, that's
a big monster.
There really hasn't been a good story on their prospect pitching side really this year. Severino.
Ian Clarkin has been everything you would expect Ian Clarkin to be this year.
But, I mean, Severino, as I talked about on Twitter, like in high A, since he's moved to high A, 20 and two-thirds innings, 11 hits, I think two runs or four runs, six walks, 28 strikeouts.
Well, you were definitely on him. And then Shane Green.
Shane Green, and we had him in the handbook. We had him at 14 or 15. 16. 16 in the handbook. And he's in the major leagues this year. He's got very, very, very good stuff. Sinks the ball real well. Has a nice... we say bastard slider. We just did. On the podcast. It's a matter of whether he can control the zone. And if he does everything right, he can be a rotation guy. Maybe a back end, but he can be a guy.
Now, I know you also did the Phillies in the book, and you did the Phillies in the midseason handbook along with other teams. It almost feels like the Phillies have less good news than the Junkies.
No, now I'm sad.
They have less good news.
They've got J.P. Crawford, who got really good reviews, and they have Michael Franco, who's still 21, and
he's gotten hot lately.
He's gotten very hot lately. He's hitting triples for some reason, which is weird because his foot speed is not his thing.
What he's known for.
He's got everyone
is like 20 speed, maybe 30.
Yeah, he had a triple yesterday, which I kind of fell out of my chair. But he's got great defense over at third base.
See, I still would go great. I would go as better.
Improved.
Improved.
Everyone I talk to loves his defense, and even the manager Sandberg said they'd take him over Ashy defensively.
I know all that. I struggle believing. I believe he can be very solid there. I just don't believe with the tools he has.
I can believe that he's capable, and I can believe that he's probably above. But again, I do think that's absolutely true. Defense improves more in the minor leagues than anything else can. It really just takes dedication, work, and the right instructor.
And the right position. Because you could, you can't make a shortstop.
Right. You can't make Michael Franco a shortstop. So, but lack of first step
quickness. Third base and second base, those are effort positions as much. You got to have some tools like hands, but you have to have tools to.
Hands.
Thank you. I was a decent enough rebounder in my day. Thank you. I'm scrappy as heck.
But I mean, like, but back to the Phillies. Like, who is the Phillies' best pitching prospect if it's not Jesse Biddle? Or is it still Jesse Biddle by default?
It's still Jesse Biddle. It's still a guy who had plantar fasciitis last year and whooping cough and is on the temporary inactive list to get his confidence back and was concussed by hail this year.
Concussed by hail? I missed that story.
He had a car that he went out and it was a newish car and they had a freak hailstorm in Reading. And he was outside in it, and he just got pelted by chunks of hail and was on the 7-day concussion DL.
Are you serious?
I am deadly serious.
That must have been during draft covers that I missed that story.
It was.
And the resulting...
I'm sure
cacophony from you.
I was in Reading a little bit this year, and they were talking about the body shops just made a windfall, like Scrooge McDuck money. After that hailstorm.
Scrooge McDuck money?
You jump it into the pit of the gold coins and somehow not injuring yourself because physics.
This has turned into a JJ and the Bear podcast.
This is what I deal with on a regular basis. For good and bad.
That's pretty hilarious.
Well then.
No, Jesse Biddle, that's too straight, but you're not off him, JJ. He's still their guy. Their best pitching prospect.
The way I do it, I did the Angels list last year. You rank 30.
That's right.
You know, and if you said if you asked me though, what do I think Jesse Biddle's going to be? You think what's the likelihood that he's going to be a quality big league starter?
Right.
I would put it at I'd say it's less than 50-50.
Yeah, I think the percentage is falling for sure year by year. Is there a good story, a good news story in the Phillies organization? Who's your rising guy?
I think my rising guy was Cam Perkins.
And?
JJ knows, apparently, that you don't.
Short catcher.
Oh, yeah. Williams Astudillo, the bad-bodied catcher, or just a catcher with a head, no neck, and a torso.
Does he have small hands like you, or no?
Stop that. I can't do anything about these.
You can't do anything about your tiny
hands. But Estadio can hit. I mean, yeah, he really can. It's a short... I mean, for lack of a better... But the thing about when you've got a guy with short arms, DJ Peterson is this way.
So he's kind of like the Phillies Angel Salome that we were just talking about earlier today?
I don't know if he's going to catch in the... You know, he's going to be able to catch long-term. I mean, and it's not a good body. But when you have those short arms, you can have a very direct stroke.
I mean, Yogi Berra said you don't hit with your face. You don't hit with your stomach either. He's...
What does this have to do with small hands?
Stop it!
Sorry.
That's real. That's really enough out of you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I do. I apologize. I will crash your podcast.
I will ball my small fists together and give you the annoyance of a lifetime.
Small fists of rage.
I'm like raging a calf. Maybe not
what,
raging
other orgs, what other orgs did you wind up doing?
The Brewers and the Twins.
I think people know what's in their farm system.
The Buxton, the Sano, really the pitchers.
It's really good. But the Brewers, that's an organization that's had a good year. At the major league level, obviously. But the minor league level, you actually had more than 10 guys to try to fit into a top 10.
It was quite the argument for who was the 10th guy. You had to squint a little bit on number 10.
And these aren't like super prospects.
This isn't like the Twins list where you go, man, right. I'm leaving off a guy I really liked.
But my lead-in for that intro was, you know, entering this season, they almost had nowhere to go but up. We ranked them 29th this offseason. Yeah. And they did go up. They did not surpass the Angels. Jimmy Nelson looks like a viable major league starter whenever the Brewers want to pull that trigger and send Marco Estrada to the land of somewhere else.
Known as the bullpen.
Well, that's true.
But, I mean, this is not even counting their 2014 draft guys, which are pretty boom or bust, you know?
Yeah.
If Jimmy Nelson graduates, which Nelson would sure hope that he will... But if Jimmy, because he doesn't need that many more starts to do it, but if Jimmy Nelson graduates, we said at the draft, their top three picks, prospects in next year's draft next year's prospect handbook may be their top three picks in this draft because all three of those guys are that I see.
Medeiros, the lefty out of Hawaii.
Yep.
Good for him. The athletic guy, Monte Harrison, who can do all sorts of things on various sporting fields.
Correct.
And Jacob Gatewood, who we just talked about for the home run derby last year at the Futures game and hit balls all over City
Field.
That's
right. Get power.
That's right. For either of you guys, but first for JJ, since you kind of marshaled all of our forces for this book, which farm system took you the most by surprise, either on the positive or the negative side, where when you were editing their 10 for this handbook update, wow, this is a lot better than I thought it was, or oh my gosh, what happened to you, Sulu? Turn around.
Well, the
That's
A's,
a JJ we, and John inside
joke. The A's we knew. We, right. The trade, we reflected the trade. The trade, the Cubs trade's in there. So at the last minute, we had to do some surgery and take their number one and number two prospects out of the top 10.
That's an ugly 10.
And when you do that, they're left with not really. Their top two prospects are guys who, as I always put, those are guys who would be very good as a fourth, fifth prospect.
I like their top three. I like Daniel Robertson. That's a quantum leap forward year. He's hitting for power. He's an infielder. Maybe he stays at shortstop, but I mean, maybe not. Then Renato Nunez.
We're going to see at the Futures game.
Going to be really interesting. The power numbers are significant. And I like Matt Olson.
Who's a power guy who walks.
77 walks already. His numbers jumped off the page.
You're kind of like, okay, is he a good Chris Carter? Is that, in some ways?
It sounds like a money ball guy.
Good question, but he is. I mean, he's a three true outcomes guy. And the thing is, in high school, he was thought of as a feel for hit guy by the scouts in Georgia. So I like him.
There is some possibility his batting average could do better than
liked him in high school, but then you look at the rest of that system, and boy, it's a good thing their big league rotation is young and fairly cost controlled, and they do have depth because there's nothing coming on the pitching side.
Well,
nothing.
They could make one move like this. They did.
That's
right. I mean,
they shot their bullet.
It's a good way to kind of. We'll get back to the question you asked, but I do think with this trade, you look at it, and it's one of those trades that. It was Saturday night, wasn't it? Last Saturday night that this happened?
It was the 4th of July. It was Friday night.
Sitting there, and it's like, when it first comes out, you're like, wow. And the first thing that hit me when they were talking about the rumors of it was that if this is a two-team deal, Addison Russell has to be part of it. Because the A's had no way to do this deal
right. That
does not involve Addison Russell. And then you can go to the question of, if you're the Cubs, they just collected. They, in some way, shape, or form, now have four shortstops. Which seems crazy. You can say three. Arsmendi, Alcantara in a different system, maybe it's four.
Right.
If you're crazy, maybe.
If Alcantara were on the Mets, he'd have been their big league shortstop to start the year last year. That's where Arsmendi is.
Arsmendi, major leaguer.
Yes,
that's right.
True. But you see that, but then you say at the same time.
That was really more of a Mets dig than an Alcantara bonus.
I know. I'm just noting he's up on
I was
the
hoping you would help pile on the Mets. But yes, getting back to this trade.
But you know, you look at it and you say, if you're the Cubs, this trade is one of the they now have they can go in so many different directions right now. Do they need more pitching? Absolutely. The other thing I'll make a point with that though is the A's needed pitching coming in this year, and look how they did that. You have to get lucky. You have to scout well, but you can get creative. The A's have managed to get through the first half where they didn't have Jared Parker.
Right.
They've had multiple injuries, and they went, okay, we've reclaimed Scott Kazmir.
Right.
Thumbs up. You know, Jesse Chavez goes from being a reliever to being a frontline starter. Shocking. You know, Sonny Gray, they developed from this, you know, themselves, and you look at it and say, wow, he's
a lot of guys had a shot to draft Sonny Gray. They're the ones that pulled the trigger.
Right. What I'm saying is you can do things in some ways. Yes, I know it is hard to find pitching, but the Cubs have shown it right now. They reclaimed Jason Hamill. Jason Hamill, that was a one-year, $6 million deal.
I think it's also harder to find power these days than it is to find pitching. I mean, it's harder to keep pitching healthy, but it's harder to find power. In that case, Josh, I like this trade for the Cubs. Even though I don't think of Addison Russell and Billy McKinney as power guys, they have athletes who can hit. And, you know, they might have traded Scott Feldman for their current ace in Jake Arrieta, if Arrieta has figured it out. And he was a highly regarded amateur and minor league prospect. So for me, I like this trade for the Cubs. I do expect that one of those four shortstops or some of these hitters will get spun elsewhere. And it would not shock me if they were spun to the Red Sox, where, you know, Jason McLeod, Jed Hoyer, and Theo Epstein helped identify some of the Henry Owenses or the Matt Barnes and Anthony Renatos of that farm system.
Absolutely right, and I was going to go there with, I mean, you can take this farm system and probably make a trade for any player in baseball whose name doesn't rhyme with Bike Gout. You could, if they were so inclined, they could spin off and get David Price.
Because nothing rhymes with Puig, you know. So
no one's getting Puig out of Los Angeles. That's Puig you would right there. You ain't getting him.
Sorry, you lost me on Puig you would.
I don't know,
but yeah, they could probably get any pitcher they wanted, just about.
You could get David Price right now, I'd imagine, with that system, if they were so inclined. But what about next year? You can go get Giancarlo Stanton.
And that's a farm system, to get back to that question, JJ. Farm system that probably left you wanting Tampa Bay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but I guess wasn't as big of a surprise.
A surprise, but there is no number one prospect right now. I mean, your choices for number one, I'm not going to give everything away, but here, it's not going to be that exciting. It's not going to be Rays fans who are like, okay, now I have to rush out.
Rays fans.
You know, but hey, there are
Jonah
fans.
Jonah Carey, there are a lot of bloggers.
No, there are Rays fans. Cowbells they owners. Can't make it to the game, though. My grandmother lives in St. Pete, and her friends have told me, yeah, we're Rays fans, but the game's end. I mean, we're in bed by 9. That's what her friends say, and that's true. That's
they the, really just should take the roof off and play nothing but day games.
I think the classic Rays epitome of this season is, they had a pigeon delay, I think, yesterday, and they play it ball inside.
but no, the Rays number one prospect possibilities, kind of looking at it, you got Taylor Guerrero, who is
just returned to the mound, 11 months in, good for him.
Just returned to the mound in the GCL.
Just returned to the mound from Tommy John and a drug suspension, served at the same time.
Smart man.
And Hawk Ju Lee, a shortstop coming off of a knee injury, who has a sub 600 OPS in AAA.
And bats ninth basically every day for a 500 AAA team. And who are the other choices? That Justin O'Connor?
Who hasn't really... I mean, you're still hoping he's going to hit, but he's had plate discipline issues throughout his career. He's never really hit. He's got some power.
And the guy who was probably, in retrospect, their best prospect coming into the year was their number 10 prospect in Kevin Kiermaier. He's hit a lot more this year, and so they've actually gotten...
Well, their number one coming in. I mean, Oda Rizzi's been solid. I mean,
right. But Kevin Kiermaier has been awesome.
You only need to take one look at Kevin Kiermaier at Durham. That's a stud. Yeah, that's a pure grade A, 100% beef stud out there.
But that's... I mean, that's the team... On the flip side,
as usual, Josh, you just went one step too far. That's what makes Bear Bear.
On the flip side, I do think the Rockies, I think it drops off pretty quick.
Yeah, that's an intriguing farm system.
But you look at it, I've had multiple guys tell me, said that Asheville team is, okay, do you stop at three? Do you go to four legit prospects? I mean, because you've got Dahl, Dahl, McMahon, Tapia, and Briseno, the catcher, is pretty intriguing as well. That's all just there. Then you go up a level and you say, okay, Rosel Herrera, pretty interesting. Trevor Story.
Still gaining acceptance.
There's something there.
The Dan Quayle of their farm system.
There's something there. And then you go to the AAA and you got Jonathan, AA and AAA, this year you got Jonathan Gray, who, by the way, is their best prospect.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good
call. Also, a guy doesn't count that has shoulder issues, Eddie Butler. He's going to rank once he counts again for the book.
Right, that's true. So you put it all together, and that's a really solid system at the top. Now, you get down to 10, 11, 12, and...
And they also had a finally season from Tyler Matzik. I mean, he didn't break through in a big way. The fact that guy's in the major leagues. He has been useful. They had a lot of injuries. They called on him. He hasn't embarrassed them. I'm happy for him. That guy's had nothing but struggles since his major league, his pro career started.
Carell Prime made the Cy League All-Star game, and Raimel Tapia didn't. I was kind of
ahead of his brother, Optimus.
But sorry, Carell Prime is, I mean, he...
that's a Josh joke. You're rubbing off on me.
I'm just like...
You're just plowing through like a truck through a billboard.
Yes. But, Prime is pretty intriguing, toolsy, I mean, with power, but... You say, okay, maybe not, but yeah, it could maybe. It's an interesting system.
It is an interesting system. I did the Cubs and White Sox. I actually thought the White Sox were trending forward as a farm system last year. I feel like their progress has been halted by Matt Davidson stinking. All the injuries right before the book went out. Concussion for Courtney Hawkins.
Tim Anderson.
Broken wrist for Tim Anderson. Knee injury for Francelis Montes. And you're looking at the pitching, and outside of Tyler Danish, you're like, it's a little struggle to find. Jacob Mays had a really bad,
June.
It was a terrible start.
Super June. He's got 23 doubles now.
I'm all in on Jacob May. I like Jacob May. So, I ranked him in the top 10 last year. I would have liked to have seen it. That's a system that feels like it just hasn't maintained the momentum. But again, you have
still,
two.
Way beyond what I usually think of as White Sox systems. It's like, wow, that's a disaster.
But like the scout told me a couple years ago, and I was talking about Astros draft. It takes two good drafts to make up for that one really bad draft. So that's where I think the White Sox are. And this year's draft will really depend on sign Carlos Rodon or not.
And I think I'm unqualified in my love for Tim Anderson. That guy I could watch all day, every day. I think he's had the best all-around game that I saw this year, and that includes Gallo.
But
as Jacob over here in the corner points out, they got a reclamation project in Terrence Marin, who's tearing up.
Yes. He is a solid high A pitcher now.
Reclamation story.
But the thing with Tim Anderson that I would say, though, is that the question we still have to watch with him is where is he going to end up playing?
Right, and that's a question for a lot of their young infielders. It sounds like Troy Michalczewski. I think I got that one right. Trey.
You watched the first name.
That's first horrible. Name is easy. The last name's
I was
hard.
So focused on Michalczewski, I botched the first name. I'm Trey Michalczewski. You might remember me from such games as botched third base ground ball and second botched third base ground ball and third, because it sounds like first base or DH. It sounds like batter's box is his only position right now. But Tim Anderson...
Michael Johnson is not a sure bet that he's
not
second.
I talked to a scout who said Tim Anderson at shortstop last year. I thought when he first came here, there's a lot to work with there. I think that he can get better. This year, it's like second base is going to be a stretch for him, and center field is a possibility for him for Micah Johnson. So there hasn't been progress for some of those guys. It's early; they're both in A ball, but the early returns are not encouraging.
Right. I mean, as far as defensively. The other returns are encouraging.
The Nationals, I guess, are another – I brought them up because that's another farm system that it seems like there's just not a whole lot of there with the Nats outside of Lucas Giolito.
I was going to say, but
that's a good
I do
to
come
have.
Back to – I do come back to like –
Stars.
Like with the Cubs. The Cubs system is not still as deep. The Pirates system, I would say, is probably deeper. The Twins system is probably deeper. But I do think the Cubs have the best farm system in baseball because if you have three top 10 prospects – That outweighs can have 10 and but you're 10 very good prospects and I have three top of the line prospects, I'll take the three. The only team that can compete with them on that is the Twins, because the Twins have two top 15 prospects at least.
And with the Nationals, I will point out that it's not a one-star show in Hagerstown. They've got Wilmer Defoe there, who's putting up a wonderful year. He's Rafael Bautista, also putting up a really nice year there. Those two combined at the top of the order have stolen 72 bases this year.
I like A.J. Cole. I stuck A.J. Cole in my 51-75, but I'm just thinking, like, Michael Taylor's had a nice year.
Steven Souza is a hard guy to figure out, but at the same time, there's something there.
There's something. Very loud contact, and our friends at TrackMan registered him as the hardest hit ball all last year in the Arizona Fall League. He makes some very, very loud contact.
He does. This is an organization that depth is not its middle name. There is some potential star power, though. I agree.
Michael Taylor, we have some questions about Michael Taylor. You know, when we did our 50, he did not make our 50. The thing, I'm going to go into a digression here that I'll give to John Manuel a little warning here, because I'm going to mention things, you know, like Babbitt. But Michael Taylor's strikeout rate this year, he's having a great, great year. Here's why there is some reason for at least a little bit of skepticism, though. Michael Taylor's strikeout rate this year has gone up. He's striking out 30% of the time. His power's gone up, too. Okay, so that's a good trade.
Sure.
You hit for more power, you strike out rate. He's also hitting, though, for the best average of his career by far. Well, why is that happening, even though he's striking out more? He's hitting 440 when he makes contact. The best way I can explain it is Mike Trout, if you design the player who would hit the best anytime he makes contact, Mike Trout would be that guy. He can beat out balls in the infield.
Right.
He hits the ball really hard. Mike Trout's career BABIP is 365. It's fair to say that Michael Taylor may be hitting 320 right now, but over a longer term, he's really more of that 260, 270 hitter at best that he's been. I think there's a step forward this year, but I do think that those numbers right now, he's a great power speed prospect. You know, again, he's a very good prospect, but don't just look at it and say, wow, he's hitting 320, 400, 550, and go, this is the guy he is.
Right. I'm with you. Bear, anything else for you to we're supposed to poke the bear? Is that what I understand?
No, we're not poking the bear this time. We'll save poking the bear for next time.
We're at the 52-minute mark, which is usually...
We haven't even really gotten into the 50, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we haven't. I guess I thought we discussed so many of these players. We haven't gotten into the rankings. Josh,
we did a mid-season top... If you're listening to this and don't know, we've done a mid-season top 50.
I think people know.
Probably do know.
I'll tell you one of the guys in the 50 that we haven't talked about. You mentioned the Pirates organization that, JJ, we discussed. It's your cheeseball, Tyler Glasnow. And, I mean, it feels like Tyler Glasnow, you could rank him as high as you want to. I mean, if you wanted to make the case... If you want to make the Tyler... Right. But if you want to make the case that Tyler Glasnow had the best stuff of any minor league pitcher, could you make that case?
No.
Is he in that discussion?
He's in that discussion. I wouldn't say best. I mean, I'd say he's in that discussion, though. I do think that Giolito, on a pure... If you're grading out the pitches stuff, I think Jonathan Gray, if you're grading out the pitches, are both. Like, because Glasnow's, the thing about it is Glasnow's...
a third pitch.
Glasnow's second pitch even isn't in that same discussion. What Glasnow does is that Glasnow's fastball is really, really hard to square up.
I think what he does is he doesn't give up hits, which is kind of the most basic part of the game is to hit the ball, see it and hit it. He doesn't give up hits.
No. And now, I mean, again, you want to see him do that at higher levels too, because... As he goes higher levels, the thing with him is that you expect his control is going to get better. I know people can look at it and say, wow, he walks too many guys. He does. Sure. He also, though, I feel like in many ways is ahead of schedule because he is a really tall pitcher. A whole lot of those really tall pitchers, if they do figure it out, it doesn't come till 24, 25.
Right.
As the scouts put it to me, he said, the thing about a 6'7", 6'8" pitcher is, if he's good for his second or his third team. Because the first team gets tired of him. Johnny Helwig says hi.
I'll say Randy Johnson tweets hello.
Randy Johnson at the age that Tyler Glasnow is right now, and just Tyler Glasnow is not Randy Johnson, but at the age that Glasnow was, Randy Johnson was barely a prospect from the standpoint of you have to throw the ball.
At USC.
Yeah, and at USC, I've heard the quote before that, you know, when they were at USC, Randy Johnson was a worse prospect. At times he was probably not as good a prospect as a future scouting director.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his catcher was
Damon Oppa.
Yeah,
Or was it maybe he wasn't as good of a prospect as NFL coach Jack Del Rio? That was another catcher.
If I may, we have breaking catcher-based news. the Red Sox have DFA'd
AJ Pierzynski
and called up Christian Vasquez.
Absolutely.
You basically called that in the book. You did the Red Sox.
And I would say that Christian Vasquez should be a very regular catcher for them until Blake Swihart comes aside and
says, the intro to the book was the Red Sox won with an older team in 04, but their subsequent championship teams, well, it was a younger team in 07, then went back to an older team in 2013, and that team clearly has aged out. And it's time to start another youth group.
They have the guys to do it.
And they do.
And if I may say, I think Vasquez leaving the Futures game makes room for Blake Swihart.
At this point, it becomes tough.
At this point, it's all about who's close to Minnesota, basically.
Well, go on, Blake Swihart. Stand outside Minnesota.
I don't know if the Triple A Iowa Cubs have a catcher who can join this game.
Yasmel Pinto says that he wouldn't mind.
There you go.
Manny Ramirez can come on. Why not? He's not a catcher, but why not? But
speaking of catcher, you actually transitioned me to that. That was about my next question. We made Blake Swihart our top-ranked catcher on this list, Josh. I know JJ is very bullish about that. How about Bear? Are you bullish on this, or are you bearish on that ranking?
Bear is bullish. I like Blake Swihart quite a bit. I saw him for, I think, three or four games this year. And he's excellent. I don't think I got to see him throw because nobody ran on him. Because you don't run on him because he's thrown, I think, about 50% of runners out this year. He hits well from both sides of the plate. He's done nothing wrong this year. I think he's a top catching prospect in baseball and maybe a top 30 prospect in baseball.
Oh, he's like top 15. Yeah, for us. Yeah, so he's like, not maybe. We have him.
Well, absolutely then.
You said that with quite a bit of conviction. 14th. We have him 14th.
14th.
With Austin Hedges 17th. So part of it was Austin Hedges having kind of a soft season, JJ, offensively. More of it was just the robustness of the scouts' opinions of Blake Swihart, correct?
Right. Well, the thing about it is that when you're comparing the two, Austin Hedges...
And throw in Kevin Plawecki and Jorge Alfaro into this discussion
Okay. Well, let's start. Okay, we'll start by working our way up.
We're backing up.
Beep, Jorge Alfaro. Beep. Okay, you don't drop... You know, but Jorge Alfaro, you look at him and you say, tools-wise, matches up very well with these guys. But at some point, and I'm not saying you give up on him anyway, but when you're comparing these guys, Jorge Alfaro, you'll see some good receiving, and you'll see receiving that you go, wait, how did he miss that ball?
You see some receiving and some retrieving.
Right, you yes. do. And his pass ball, I think he's up to 19, I think now, 18, 19 this year.
That's his customary full year total.
Right.
At some point, the tools have to be paired with skills.
Right.
He has improved skills. But that just tells you how raw he was. Because the guy is just 21.
Right,
but
don't give up.
Let me say this too. He's on a staff that includes, as we've seen, Jose LeClerc, Jason Knapp. Guys like,
But in the big leagues, he's better handled that. But the thing about it is we've seen it ourselves. We've seen him miss balls where you say, okay, the guy missed his spot. I get that. But it wasn't in the dirt. It wasn't that you had to come out of your crouch. It was... You just had problems getting your mitt on it and holding on to it. And that's the guys who see him, that's what they say, like, still like him. But he doesn't, when you're talking about these comparisons, as toolsy as he is, you can't compare that to a guy like Swihart or Hedges, who is a much better receiver.
Swihart's a year older, but he's a level ahead. He's more productive offensively.
And they're
both quite athletic. Is Alfaro more athletic? Maybe. But Blake Swihart's a good athlete, too.
Swihart's a good athlete. Alfaro, most athletic catcher in the game, in the minors. There might be some guy I'm not thinking of who just converted from shortstop or something, but Alfaro is as athletic as a catcher as you're going to see. But Swihart is more skilled.
Kevin Plawecki's a completely different animal from those guys. He's more of a college guy, high floor, lower ceiling compared to these guys. I mean, there is some ceiling here, though, Josh. This guy has... offensive ability, patience. He seems like he's gotten better at what the Mets really stress to him, which is don't just take some of these fastballs just because they're fastballs that are not exactly where you want to drive that pitch, be ready to hit that fastball. He feels like he's done that because the power numbers are up.
Yeah, I think he's very close to eclipsing Travis lowercase d Arnaud as the catcher of the future in the New York system, and let's talk to scouts who like him better. I think at some point we talked about results over potential, and Travis d'Arnaud is a poster boy for that sort of thing.
Yeah, Travis d'Arnaud.
Is Travis d'Arnaud?
No. Well, Travis d'Arnaud's thing, I still think he could be a very solid big league regular catcher, but his problem has always been he can't be healthy long enough to really ever put together a stretch.
But when he was in the big leagues this year, he left a lot of things.
He's back in the big leagues. And he's doing
right now. Right, but I mean, he left a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like they're not giving up guy yet.
But they're not. I think they think of Pilecki as being more likely the long term answer than Darnold. And I think you have to. Pilecki has a history of durability, and tools wise, skills wise, you know, matches up pretty well with them. But to me, okay, so then you get to the real debate though, which is Austin Hedges versus Blake Swihart.
Right. We've worked our way up to it.
Hedges is still, I would say, better defensively. Hedges is kind of considered the gold standard, although I have to say Roberto Peña with the Astros is least in that discussion as far as...
And Christian Vasquez.
And Christian Vasquez. Those are the guys in discussion. But Austin Hedges has been pretty much since his first full year.
He sprung fully formed, basically, from the head of John Savage and was.
And they really thought, okay, this is a guy who's really good defensively. I think that's true. At the plate, throw the caveats in. He's a catcher. Catchers take a long time to develop. Yadier Molina is the outlier who you don't want to make him a trend. But Yadier Molina was a terrible hitter for 3 years and ended up being basically an MVP candidate.
Right.
Okay. That being said, Hedges has never hit. He's had some good years, but Hedges has never hit like Swihart hits. Now, and Swihart has, I think, probably switch hitter with more offensive potential, and is showing it more right now. You compare that, okay, you could say, I want Hedges first because he's got a little bit more defense, but Swihart's defense is very good. You're seeing an arm that, it may not be Hedges' arm, but is a well above average arm.
Right.
You're seeing receiving that is, it's not Vasquez in his own system, but it's perfectly acceptable, if not better than that. The trends are up. And Hedges, you just really kind of want, you know, 245, 291, 374 this year. Again, 21-year-old catcher in Texas, where you're going to be, it's going to be 150 pretty much
right.
every game.
He's probably getting pretty worn out. Yeah.
All those caveats. That being said, Swihart has more power, more productive power. Swihart's a switch hitter. Swihart has a better hit tool. That's why Swihart's a better prospect.
And Swihart has dealt, I'm sure it's not Texas, but it's hot in the Northeast too. And he's also dealt with the cold in Portland in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, which is probably a bigger issue for a guy who's from New Mexico.
Yeah.
The heat probably doesn't bother him as much as the...
Yeah,
it does get hot in the Northeast, but nothing like Texas. I mean,
no, it's not the same. No doubt it's not the same. Left-handed pitcher, do you need to go, Bear?
I don't know when to go, but I was going to say something, but I forgot what I was going to say, so...
I killed you. Left-handed pitchers is another area I wanted you guys to debate, because it feels like Henry Owens, Julio Urias... Daniel Norris. That's three really different cats to be your top left-handed pitcher in terms of stuff as well. Because Urias, there's pitchability there, but much more velocity than you would think just kind of looking at him. Daniel Norris, I think, probably consistently the hardest thrower of those three at 91, 96.
I think
Urias is right there with him. But isn't he more of a three-pitch guy than Norris, who has more of the fastball and the curveball?
Yeah, more three-pitch guy. But I'm saying, like, velo-wise, you can see...
Well, that's why he ranks first here, right? Because he combines the bat missing of Henry Owens with a little better command. But if you're looking for... To me, it feels like Daniel Norris has a chance to have both. I may be putting too much stock in Daniel Norris. He's not there yet, but he's athletic. He's got... as good a velocity as any of these guys. He seems like he's flashed the above-average secondary stuff as well. I feel like he's taken off this year, Josh, and it feels like there's still more to come with him. I feel like it's hard for Urias to get a whole lot better. He's ridiculously precocious, but the reports on him are already so good. I feel like there's still room to grow for Daniel Norris.
I mean, I like you talked about Urias. I like Urias a lot. I think that's my guy of those three, just because I watched him in spring this year, and you go, all right, this is really good. And you go, wait a minute, he's 17,
right.
Or 16, or whatever he was.
18 in August.
Okay, so yeah, he was 17 when I was watching. You go, wait a minute. You know, there's still time for him to grow, and not necessarily grow, but mature and learn how to pitch a little better and work with his stuff a little bit better. This guy is really good, and we talked about him earlier, but if you wrote a script and pitched this guy as a character in your baseball book,
right,
you'd get your book shredded,
right,
and you would never work in the book industry again, because you've got... a left-hander with the strange eye injury who's 17, who's making fools of hitters, not half his age, but very much older than him.
Yeah.
that's not something you see in this world very often.
A guy who probably JJ can't watch half the movies, or isn't supposed to watch half the movies they show on the team bus.
Yeah, 17s are 17.
But last year he was 16.
Last year
he
would have trouble. But this
last year, like, the R-rated movies. He would not be admitted without parent or coach.
He wouldn't have been admitted to, like, Showgirls when it was in theater.
Sure.
And he was 17, if I remember correctly.
You might be right.
But the thing about Urias is that, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just not playing along. I apologize, guys.
It's okay.
There's too much content to get it through. The thing about it is with Urias is when you say why did he end up ranking first? Partly it was is that how we do this process is we try to run, you know, our list. We get a prelim list together and we run it by a whole lot of people in the industry. And, you know, and every time we get back, one thing would be, I think you're low on Urias.
Yeah.
And we thought we were being pretty high on Urias. And then the more you talk, he's like, no, I think you're being a little low. So we kept bumping him up. And then we get some back. He's like, I think you're a little low on Urias. That he's so hard to peg because he's a pitcher. It's not like a hitter. If a 16-year-old hitter's doing this, when Bryce Harper was coming up, you just know, okay, in very rare occasions do a guy who has the ability to do this in the big leagues at 18 not end up being a star.
Right.
That's not the case.
Pitchers, that's actually going to be my last caveat on Urias. He's an outlier because he's so good so young.
He could pitch right now in Double-A. I had scouts tell
You're
me...
confident.
I had scouts tell me that he could have pitched in Double-A last year.
Right.
There's a reason they're not. It makes sense. They're very much limiting his innings. They're very much limiting his outings. And there's like, okay, there's no real reason to. What does he gain by putting him in Double-A? But he could do it. That's great. The concern, though, is that, okay, how much does that add to your long-term, you know, if you look at his stuff, it's really good. He's a top 15 prospect because of his stuff. But do you really give him as much credit for being able to do this at 17, or does it just mean that he learned how to do these things at an age where most people haven't yet?
Right.
But in the long term, you look at it and say, okay, compared to a guy like Daniel Norris at 17 wasn't close to what Urias was, but Daniel Norris, the trend keeps going up.
Right.
Does Urias's trend going to keep, is his skills going to keep going up? Or are we seeing the guy who really, if you put him in the big leagues, he'd be, you know, he would figure it out, but he'd keep doing it, but he's just already almost big league ready.
Yeah. And he got an inning of big league time in spring training and struck out two in a perfect inning.
So right. Hard, as a matter of fact. And maybe he doesn't have to get any better, but no, it's just very difficult to know what to do with a 17-year-old. He just is, to me, just so off the charts. I think that the Dodgers are being smart and limiting his work, but in some ways I almost wonder, like, well, if he can handle Double-A, maybe they should send him to Double-A, and I'm not sure where they'd put him in their big league rotation right now, seeing as how they have like $80 million of big league starting pitching. But he's not that. It doesn't feel like he's that far away from helping.
The thing I'll say,
his walk rate is pretty high right now. It's 4 walks per 9.
But he is pitching in the Cal League, right, where you pitch places where you nibble a little bit because anything left out over the plate could end up being blown in a 50-mile-an-hour jet.
Right.
Mark Appel says hi. It's one of those things, though, that you look at it and you say, okay, of the teams out there, I'm going to do a story on this hopefully later this week. Of the teams out there, now that the A's have traded to get Samardzija and Hamill, and they traded away Addison Russell, the Dodgers are the team out there of the buyers who really controls the market. Like, I mean, there are other teams that can get creative and do deals, but the Dodgers are the team that has the premium prospects, and also for them, they have big league inventory,
right,
to really be a part of whatever, and they also can take on payroll, to be a part of any trade that they want to be a part of. Between Urias, Corey Seager, Jock Peterson, there is no one out there who's probably trading to help the current big league club. The Cubs have more than that.
Right.
The Cubs don't care if they win more games in 2014 at this point. They just don't.
The Red Sox are in the same boat.
The Red Sox, the Red Sox, I know that they are in Boston, so you don't want to give up.
Except they're in last place in their division, and the
Dodgers
are in first.
That's what I'm talking about. That they're,
no, he's saying the Red Sox. He's saying the Red Sox aren't going to be buyers because...
I gotcha. Right. Oh, it's the Cubs. I thought you were saying the same boat as the Dodgers. You're saying the same boat as the Cubs.
Right. The Dodgers are a potential buyer, and if you look at the buyers, again, the Twins, if you said the teams that could, Twins, Cubs, Red Sox, Pirates, and Dodgers. Well, the Pirates, I would say, kind of are in that group as far as depth, but the problem for the Pirates is a whole lot of their guys who you would like, You would be you can't trade Jameson Taillon.
Right.
Austin Meadows at this point, you're not trading a guy who has not played this
year. So many injuries, certainly. I mean, like St. Louis, I guess, would be somewhat in the discussion with the Dodgers, and as far as, but they don't have the same cash to me of premium prospects. They
Oscar
have
Tavares is a great starting point.
Right.
But if they were battling for that, the Dodgers can say, okay, again, this is unlikely that these two end up in a bidding war for someone, but if they did, they say, okay, well, how about Jock Peterson? And oh yeah, by the way, we'll throw in a Seager, we'll throw in a Urias. The Cardinals don't have a prospect wise, they have some good ones, but not a guy you can come back with. Rob Kaminsky doesn't make that equivalent.
I agree. Josh, you silently are nodding in assent, I suppose.
No, I agree with you. I think the Cardinals could assemble a pretty good package. If you started with Tavares, you added a guy. If you want more outfielders, you can add Piscotty to that deal. You can add, if you're really being frisky, you could add Marco Gonzalez.
Right, from a depth standpoint, I do think St. Louis has more depth. But usually trades, and what we just saw was, you don't make the big splash trade with depth. You make it with the Addison Russells, the Jock Petersons, those kind of
prospects.
If
you're the buying team, this is another tangent. We don't need to go full tangent here, but we talk about that Phillies trade, the Phillies Astros trade, where they got Singleton and they got Santana, you know, and Cozart.
And Zide.
Right.
You look at that trade, that's a rare trade, and that was a trade of a big guy, you know, for far away prospects. Depth of potential impact guys.
Right.
It is.
And they mixed it up. They went a portfolio approach basically to the trade. They went hitters, they went pitchers. I mean, they split it up.
But most of the time, again, if you're the selling team, if you get a choice between that and the choice of getting a absolute premium guy, you want the premium guy, especially the premium guy who's close to the big leagues. I mean, that's what Jock Peterson, if the Dodgers want to trade him, there's some warts there with swing and miss this year. I think it's pretty easy to get in bad habits when you see that anytime you connect, it can go real far away in the PCL. But they have a guy who you say, okay, look, you're not projecting on what he's going to be. Could this guy make it to the big leagues 3 years from now? You're saying you can plug him in right now.
And again, I think I brought it up earlier. If you're going to trade with the Cardinals for this guy, do you look at their track record and say, maybe these guys are the right guys, even though they're not the sexiest profiles. Maybe they're the best bet to develop into good guys because the Cardinals have looked at them and said so.
That's how you do always wonder. But
if they're selling them, are they the ones that they know?
Exactly. Cardinals hitters have almost become like Braves pitchers used to be. Like Brett Wallace and Zach Cox make me think, maybe I shouldn't trade for a Cardinals hitter because usually they held
if
on
they
to
they want to get rid of them, maybe that's
they,
the...
Exactly. They hold on to the ones. Those two guys were first-round picks, and they held on to the Matt Carpenters and the Matt Adamses of the world, and those are two of their best hitters right now.
They evaluated themselves very well. That's hard to do, but they knew they were
key.
Off Brett Wallace within about an hour of drafting him.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You and I have talked about that for years. That's the first thing. The first key to making a good trade is knowing your own players. The second key is knowing the players you're getting, but knowing what you're giving up and being willing to give those players up. That's why when we talk to A's sources about this trade, they're like, "Well, it's a very emotional trade for us." Because they really believed in Billy McKinney and Addison Russell. That's why this trade was so bold and so gutsy and fun as a baseball fan. It really was a fun trade. It's been fun since then watching Jeff Samardzija's reaction to it. I mean, like, that guy's jacked and pumped and jacked to be part of that trade. I think it'll be in a playoff race.
When's the last Jeff Samardzija game that really where he pitched and went, this is going to... There's a lot riding on this.
The Big East tournament in 2006, maybe?
But, you know, going over the middle against Ohio State or something?
That's probably it, actually. So.
But in
Michigan,
the All-Star game now, so that kind of stinks
for
Michigan,
him. Sorry. They didn't play him. Yeah, have to go.
All right, last thing. Who's the bigger surprise being on this midseason top 50? Is it Aaron Blair of the Diamondbacks or Dalton Pompey of the Blue Jays? I ask you, Bear.
Dalton Pompey. I mean, my goodness, Aaron Blair had a pedigree coming in. We knew he was a commodity. That's easy.
I'll say Pompey, too. And the thing about it is that we knew of Pompey, ranked in the Blue Jays top 30 coming into the year, was a very intriguing, toolsy prospect. Really, it was a question of, okay, can he build on a very solid 2013, but not spectacular 2013 season? And the answer is yes. He built a whole lot on that.
It's real and it has a chance to be spectacular with him?
Absolutely, Jerry.
But... It is one of those things where you look at him and say, okay, center fielder with on-base skills and some pop.
Yes,
that's a good combo.
Yeah, like the last line of Clint Longnecker's report, Pompey will likely begin 2014 at Dunedin, has the athleticism, makeup, and tools to be an everyday big leaguer at a premium position. Hence, when you start not just showing that that's potential, but you start playing like that, top 50 prospect.
The best way to put it is the two guys who were at the very back end of that list who we debated about is him and Brandon Nimmo. Pair of guys, center fielders in the FSL who had very good first halves.
Certainly similar profiles on the surface.
But they're very different.
Right.
But they both, you look at it and say, okay, the thing with Nimmo and him, both of them have the plate discipline on base skill. And in many ways, power is the hardest thing to find, but that's the hardest thing to develop. It's one of those things that very few guys go from I swing at everything, I make contact approach to I know my pitch, I know when to draw out to take a walk too, because the walk's good too.
Seems like Pompey is closer to what he actually will be than Nimmo. There's more projection involved with Nimmo because Nimmo's going to be a corner. But the best case scenario for Nimmo is he's going to wind up a power hitter on a corner, maybe more like a 20 home run guy, 20, 25
I think
home runs.
Best case scenario is that somehow he adds,
the
keeps
power.
Adding power, keeps adding strength, but keeps his speed to where at least first half is creating playing center. Again, if you say it's likely, I probably wouldn't say that. But if you said best case scenario, I think he does play center at least for a while. That's the best case scenario.
The reports on him almost sound like kind of like a Michael Brantley kind of player. You know, like good hit. Will he come into power? Not sure. Maybe it'd be better if he fit in center field, but could be probably a better fit on the corner.
It's not bad.
Kind of like that kind of tweener. And we've seen Michael Brantley start to kind of come into his power later in his career in Cleveland and be the best player in that CeCe Sabathia trade, whereas at the time he was kind of the sleeper in that trade.
Yeah, he's Dr. Smooth for a reason right now. That's a nickname in Cleveland circles, apparently.
Those Cleveland circles are small.
Oh, they reach Twitter.
Yeah, but they're still Cleveland Twitter. I mean, like, that's
Cleveland
like a whole
rocks,
little subset
Cleveland
of Twitter.
Cleveland rocks.
That show's at least 15 years old.
I know. He's on the prices so, right now.
That's right. But Pompey, I mean, like, what's the comp on Dalton Pompey? I mean, the speed profile center fielder. Who is really that guy these days in the big leagues? Because you can't say Mike Trout. I
mean, no.
Or
no.
Mike Gout.
You can't say Mike. The minute you throw a Mike Trout comp on anybody right now, you're just crazy.
Yeah.
Speed guy in center field?
Who's like a leadoff guy?
Michael Bourne?
Yeah. Is he kind of that kind of guy? I mean, I don't feel like he's like an 80 runner. I mean, he's fast, but he's not a blazer.
He's not a Bourne runner.
Jacoby?
Maybe he's in that Brett Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury kind of mold.
He's at 80. Brett Gardner is 80.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is I think, but the best thing I can put it is I think he's a, you know, whichever guy this ends up being, but he's in a ideal scenario for him. He's a 270, 345, 350, 420 guy who plays center up good center field and runs the bases well.
Right.
You put that together.
That has a lot of value.
That's a valuable player. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but no, because he's fast. He's too fast. So I was going to say. The stat line with that Billy Hamilton's putting up this year,
right,
with a little bit more on base and same amount of power, I cannot believe I'm saying that because Billy Hamilton has been...
Good way to finish, though, JJ, because Billy Hamilton is a great example to me of prospecting is difficult, but also like one of the things that we can't always account for, and neither can the scouts that we talk to who do either amateur scouting or pro scouting, is player development at the major league level. And that's what's intrigued me the most about Billy Hamilton. He's better in a lot of ways than what we thought he was going to be at the pro level. Has that just been, to me, that's just a function of his natural athleticism responding to what he's been challenged with.
Two things. One is kind of what you said there, and that I remember a scout saying this when he was in low A and saying, with Billy Hamilton, don't put limits on him because
right.
his athleticism is so special that he will figure things out that you don't think he can figure out.
Right.
So that's part one. Part two is that Billy Hamilton, give him incredible amounts of credit because it's easy to play baseball when you're going well and riding the wave. Billy Hamilton has many times had points where it looked like he was really struggling to do something.
Right.
He never goes into to basically a funk because of it. He just goes out there and says, okay, I need to work harder. And because of that, he's gotten, you go back to his low A year, he was sitting under 200 at the midway part of the low A year. They were saying, you know, it's like, should I stop switch hitting? No. Second half of the year, he was much better. Next year, he was much better. struggled some in AAA, but he just kept working at it, learned a new position. And now you say, okay, again, I think we may be seeing, I don't want to put limits on him. Is this maybe the best we can see from Billy Hamilton? Maybe. But you know what? You can't put limits on him because he's so athletic. This week, the ceiling on him is way more unlimited than we may think.
I think he's my favorite big leaguer right now. He's slugging .417. He has an ISO of like over .130.
He has an ISO that him and Chris Davis's ISO are very similar.
That's crazy.
That's the most insane thing I've heard all day, and I live with me.
That's a great way to end it. That's been 80 minutes. I would figure out a way to poke the bear. JJ, do you have a way to poke the bear?
Oh, it's easy. 80 minutes in. So, okay. If you want to do it, it's not hard. I'll show you how, John. Okay, so now we're to poking the bear. So,
I already did on this small hand.
What's bothering you this week, Bear?
All right, we talked about it earlier, and we disagreed on some stuff. We disagreed on some stuff, but when I hear a couple phrases, my ears kind of get all red, and I get very angry.
You want to explode?
I want to explode really bad. Tie goes to the runner is one I never want to hear again.
Oh, no.
Don't bring that one back.
I gave you a preview earlier. I'm not changing it for you.
This is bad podcasting.
But foul tip is the same way. Broadcasters, fans, get this right. A foul tip is a live ball. It goes directly back into the catcher's mitt and is caught by the catcher. Runners can advance. A foul ball straight back that is barely hit is a foul ball. Those are two different things. Please stop calling them the same.
So a foul ball is not a foul tip necessarily.
Correct. Foul tips are one thing. If it tips the ball, goes back directly into the catcher's mitt, he can catch it. It's still a strike. The batter is out. He can throw to second and nail a runner. I was an umpire for about 12 years. I saw a case where you called a foul tip, and the runner had stolen second, thinking it was a foul ball. He left second base, returned to first, and the catcher did not attempt to make a play on him. That was
he gave up the base on his own.
He stole first.
That's it. So, not even Billy Hamilton could do that. Well, hopefully he never
Germany
will do
Schaefer
that.
Germany Schaefer was the last guy to do that before they outlawed it. Why was that legal? Because why not?
Yeah, exactly. Because it was the 19th century and nobody knew any better.
Right. So what we're getting at is we're going to dispute forever on tie goes to the runner, but foul tip is indisputable.
I agree on that.
That's a live ball.
And this is Poking the Bear, brought to you by J.J. Cooper. So that's a J.J. and the Bear podcast. I was lucky enough to have been a part of it. We'll make it a rare occurrence, however. So I have to find a new podcast partner in the winter when Aaron just flees the office and does not podcast anymore.
I'll still podcast with you, John.
The J.J. and the Bear podcast has some traction. It has the greatest GIF in the history of Baseball America GIFs. Are they GIFs?
GIFs.
I prefer GIFs.
They're presents, GIFs. They're amazing.
The creator said they're GIFs, so they're GIFs. The person who made GIFs.
All right, well, then it's the greatest GIF in Baseball America history. It's going to be hard to beat it. I'm very proud of being my brainchild. That's about the most productive thing I've done in the last 6 months, besides hiring Jacob Emmert as an intern. So for Jacob and Josh and JJ, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.